this is a major breakthrough, and it really will, it'll get more women running for office.
The Melvilles were never wealthy, even though he had some initial success with his first novel.
Unfortunately, plastics and polystyrene fall into our river.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. On this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, political candidates in New York can now pay for childcare with campaign funds. Pittsfield marks Herman Melville's 200th birthday, and a Troy City councilor introduces a local law to reduce pollution. But first, if you are planning to get yourself back to the garden, think again. Woodstock 50 is officially canceled. Organizers announced Wednesday that the troubled festival that hit a series of setbacks in the last 4 months will not take place next month. The three-day fest was originally scheduled for August 16th through 18th, but holdups included permit denials and the loss of a financial backer and a production company. Jay-Z, Dead & Company, and John Fogerty announced they would not perform at the event after organizers said it was moving to Maryland from New York. The original Woodstock, a festival pushing the message of peace, love, and music, was a seminal groundbreaking event in 1969, featuring Jimi Hendrix, The Grateful Dead, Joan Baez, The Who, and many others. Well, New York has become the 12th state that allows childcare to qualify as a campaign expense. Governor Andrew Cuomo says it's another step toward gender equality and will empower more parents, especially mothers, to seek public office. WAMC's Hudson Valley Bureau Chief Allison Dunn reports.
Democrat Yuba Gretchen Shirley's children were ages 1 and 3 when she launched her campaign against Republican Congressman Peter King on Long Island in 2018. She petitioned the Federal Election Commission and became the first woman to receive federal approval to spend campaign funds on child care. And she applauded the new law in New York.
This is a major breakthrough, and it really will, it'll get more women running for office.
She says many women wait until their children are grown to run for office.
You know, you look at Nancy Pelosi, she waited until her youngest child was 17 to run. And we have, at the federal level, women don't get into leadership positions until they're usually in their 60s. And it's frankly because they wait till their children are grown. By the time we're 44 years old, 88% of American women are moms. So if we're not supporting getting moms to run, we're actually not supporting the vast majority of American women.
She is the founder of a PAC she launched in January called Vote Mama, supporting Democratic mothers with young children running for offices from school boards to Congress.
With Vote Mama, we are working to make it the norm that women can step up and run when they're ready, not when society tells them they're ready. We want to make it the norm that people run with young children and not the exception.
Westchester County Democrat Shelley Mayer sponsored the bill in the Senate. She mentions the inspiration of Gretchen Shirley, saying it was important to pass state law rather than rely on a ruling that could be overturned.
And I think by having it in the law, you're going to encourage, as they say, people to say, maybe I could run. I would say myself, I chose not to run as a young parent, in part because I was discouraged by other women in elected office, that it was just too hard having young children.
She says adopting such an attitude does not have to be the norm.
And I can just tell you, having been around Albany for a long time, that having the voices of new parents, particularly young mothers, come and speak with passion about the issues that they face has added so much to the dialogue. And that's going to be the case everywhere.
Manhattan Democrat Linda Rosenthal sponsored the bill in the Assembly. She says an aspect of New York's legislation that allows campaign funds to go toward child care expenses for elected office holders as well as candidates appears to be a first.
Particularly mothers are in charge of child care. And if they're elected officials, we shouldn't have them choose between spending their entire salary on child care or doing their job properly.
Rosenthal underscores that the funds used for child care are not from taxpayers.
This is money that candidates raise from their supporters, and their supporters know or should know what the money that they are donating goes toward. So you assume it goes toward advertising and mailers and phone calls and other campaign expenses. So they just need to know that now this kind of funding can also go to childcare, all in the service of having the candidate and the elected official do a great job.
The bill's provisions are effective in 60 days. Reporting from WAMC's Hudson Valley Bureau on the campus of Vassar College, I'm Hudson Valley Bureau Chief Allison Dunn.
Well, August 1st marks the 200th anniversary of the birth of Herman Melville, the American author who called Pittsfield, Massachusetts home while writing classics like Moby Dick. Leslie Hertzberg, executive director at the Berkshire County Historical Society, spoke with WAMC Berkshire Bureau Chief Josh Landes about the writer's time in the Berkshires and his lasting impact on literature.
Herman Melville lived here from 1850 to 1863 with his family and his extended family. He had three of his four children here, so it was really a kind of a populated, fun house. And he did a lot of his best work here. He had left New York because he wanted a quiet place to write, and he came to the Berkshires because it was a place that was familiar with him from growing up. He had an uncle who owned a farm just north of Arrowhead, and that was what is now the Country Club of Pittsfield. So he had come there as a boy to work on the farm, and he fell in love with the place. So when it came time for him to escape New York and to write, to get some quiet time for writing, he decided to purchase a farm that was very close by to his uncle's property, which he couldn't afford, unfortunately. The Melvilles were never wealthy, even though he had some initial success with his first novels. Moby Dick was never a success in his lifetime. But it was written here between 1850 and 1851, looking out his study window at a view of Mount Greylock, which he saw covered in snow. It was over the winter of 1850, and he saw it covered in snow and looking like a breaching whale back.
So 200 years on, what is the lasting legacy of Melville? What does he mean to Pittsfield today?
Well, you know, I think a lot of people know about Arrowhead, and no, I don't know that they know that he wrote Moby Dick in the Berkshires, because everyone assumes that he wrote it looking out, you know, over the ocean somewhere in New Bedford and Nantucket, who also claim Melville kind of as one of their sons. But truly, it was written here in Pittsfield, and I think that's a really important legacy for the city, and not only because it was Melville, but he really attracted a group of other writers, so including Nathaniel Hawthorne, Oliver Wendell Holmes. They were all here. They were climbing Monument Mountain, climbing Mount Greylock. So it's a really rich, rich literary history for the Berkshires.
200 years after his birth, what do you think the lasting legacy of Melville is on a broader American literary scale?
You know, Moby Dick is often classified as one of the, 100 greatest American novels. And I think that there's so much that goes into, there's so many pieces of the novel that are so important. But I do also think that, we have this wonderful story about a narrative story about the captain, but then you have all these details about whaling. So it's almost two different novels in one, and it's a really unique book that way. And I think, Melville's legacy in terms of American writing, and I think, having that, it sounds cliche, but the American dream of, writing and being a success when his family, his father really wasn't a success. Unfortunately, and he watched kind of his father struggle with money, and he always wanted to be able to make money and provide for his family, and unfortunately during his lifetime that really didn't happen, but he never stopped trying. So I think that's an important point about Melville, is that he cared about his family so deeply, and his family cared about him, and they assisted in any way that they could, either rewriting his manuscripts for him to send to publishers, or in buying his house from him when, he couldn't afford it anymore. His brother bought his house from him. So truly, he was the product of, people who were trying to get by, but, depended on their families, and their families got them through.
Leslie Hertzberg is executive director of the Berkshire County Historical Society. She spoke with WAMC's Josh Landes. A new measure to reduce plastic pollution has been introduced by a Troy City councilor. WAMC's Southern Adirondack Bureau Chief Lucas Willard reports.
The new plan to limit polystyrene food containers, plastic straws, and single-use plastic bags was introduced Wednesday by Troy City Council member David Bissember. The Democrat calls the measure the Plastic-Free Hudson River Act.
Unfortunately, plastics and polystyrene fall into our river, not only our river, but it pollutes our city streetways and alleyways as well.
New York State's own plastic bag ban goes into effect next year. Coinciding with the statewide plan, Troy's measure would opt the city into a 5-cent fee on paper bags. Plastic straws would still be available upon customer request under the plan. And the measure intends to assist small businesses with the change by giving restaurants with two or fewer locations the ability to apply for a 1-year exemption on the polystyrene ban. Again, December.
Businesses already have to comply with the statewide plastic bags ban by March 2020. And the provisions related to polystyrene in my bill are further staggered over a 2-year period, which gives small businesses additional time to prepare for these provisions.
Renee Panetta, the city's recycling coordinator, says keeping the plastics out of the waste stream is important as landfill space dwindles.
They're very light materials, but they take up a lot of landfill space. So people will still be able to recycle their film plastic, although not in the recycling bins, which diminishes volume going to the landfill. And then by us removing the volume of polystyrene that goes to the landfill, that will also have an additional environmental impact.
Panetta says the measure, developed in conjunction with the mayor's office and the group Troy Zero Waste, also complies with the city's yet-to-be-submitted solid waste plan. Within that plan, there's a component to provide education and outreach.
Within that education and outreach, that's going to encompass anything from educating about recycling itself to specific materials handling to how household hazardous wastes are handled. And that's going to be throughout the community.
Panetta says a portion of the 5-cent paper bag fee would go toward providing reusable bags to Troy residents in need. Other Capital Region communities are considering their own measures to reduce plastic pollution. Last week, the Albany County Legislature held public hearings on measures that would reduce the use of plastic bags and require that restaurants provide straws and plastic cutlery only upon request. A measure to ban plastic straws brought before the Schenectady City Council was tabled recently as the city seeks more input from local business owners. Bissember, who chairs the City Council's General Services Committee, plans to introduce the Plastic-Free Hudson River Act to the committee next Thursday. For more stories on efforts to reduce plastics in the environment, visit WAMC.org. For WAMC News, I'm Southern Adirondack Bureau Chief Lucas Willard.
And that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Remember to stay subscribed for the latest from the Northeast. Till next time, I'm Ian Pickus.